Hello, and welcome to Korean Context. My name is Jenna Gibson, Associate Director for Communication Technology and Programs at KEI, and I will be your host today. In this episode, we talk with Nicholas Hamasevich, KEI's Director of Research and Academic Affairs, who is about to leave to pursue his PhD at Catholic University. I sat down with Nicholas to reflect on his 4 years working at KEI. We discussed some recent and emerging trends in the U.S.-Korea relationship, and some potential places for growth in the future. We also discussed some of his research on Korea-India relations, his thoughts on inter-Korean relations, foreign policy in the upcoming U.S. presidential election, and much more. Nicholas, thanks for joining us today.
Well, thanks for having me on this side of the microphone.
So if you could start out by telling us a little bit about some of the major trends you have observed in the U.S.-Korea relationship over the past 4 years working here at KEI.
Sure. One that immediately comes to mind is the rise of Korea and how the U.S.-Korea relationship has continued to be seen as important and prominent in U.S. foreign policy. Now, this trend is a little bit longer than my 4 years at KEI, maybe trending over my 8 years of being in the think tank business so far, but it is very clear that Korea has become more of an important player in the eyes of foreign policy analysts at large, not just those in the Asia community. I think a couple factors in that are, one was where we had Lee Myung-bak and President Obama having a good personal relationship. Lots of stories about how President Obama only had really one real connection, and that was with Lee Myung-bak, as with another foreign leader. And so that was a big kind of push in the U.S.-Korea relationship and others seeing Korea as being an important country for the United States. Another one was where we had this stretch of six Japanese prime ministers in 6 years. So Korea kind of kept going forward. You had President Obama and President Lee connections. You had a lot of good relationship opportunities with U.S.-Korea relations. And then on the flip side, comparing to Japan, where we just had prime minister after prime minister after prime minister, it was hard for that U.S.-Japan relationship to have some continuity in it. And the Korea aspect was able to take advantage of that. The last aspect to it, I think, is you have more institutions and think tanks here in Washington, D.C. talking about Korea. I think previously it was up to individual analysts within those organizations to talk about Korea. Now we have whole institutions utilizing those analysts to really show that their institution or their organization is working on Korea, not just an analyst. And now you have, we've been here for 30 years, but you have some other new think tanks and organizations coming into Washington and doing programs, having research, doing other things that highlight the U.S.-Korea relationship. And so this is definitely a trend that is very clear during my time here at KEI.
How about the other side of the peninsula? Have you seen any major trends in the last 4 years in terms of policy towards North Korea or North Korea's behavior?
One thing I think is happening is that there is more of a consensus on the North Korean threat. I think previously when there was different intelligence or different speculation about what North Korea could do, how many nukes they had, where their missile program was, there was a realization that North Korea is a threat, but there's a differentiation between how much of a threat it was. And so now I think that many people believe that North Korea is a threat, that there is a better consensus and understanding of where North Korea is on its nuclear program, where North Korea is on its missile program, and that North Korea is getting better at these things and becoming more of a threat to the United States and its allies. Unfortunately, I think that's what's going to happen is that you're still going to have those who, even though we have an agreement on the threat of North Korea, you're still going to have those who think that containment's important, saying, well, North Korea is more of a threat, so we need to contain North Korea more. Or on the flip side, North Korea is more of a threat, so we need to engage them even more.
Now, in terms of the human rights situation, I know that's one big thing that has come out in the last few years is with the Commission of Inquiry reports and a lot more attention. Have you seen that making a big impact in terms of policies towards North Korea?
I think it's made a big impact as far as broadening the scope of understanding about North Korea, and not just among the policy makers here in Washington, D.C., but among more of the general population of the United States and South Korea and other countries. So not only with the UN Commission of Inquiry report, but especially with a lot of the either the speeches that North Korean defectors have made, whether the famous TED Talks, or their biographies or autobiographies. And so a lot of these books have come out, and I think that has really broadened the scope and really helped bring attention to not only the human rights atrocities in North Korea, but just the overall humanitarian aspect of dealing with North Korea. How do you deal with the people in North Korea that are trying to survive? How do you deal with defectors as they come into China or into Southeast Asia and then into Korea or other countries? I mean, all this stuff just adds to the complexity, but also helps broaden the scope. And so it's not just on the nuclear weapons or the craziness of the Kim family regime.
All right, so we've kind of hit the politics and the security. How about economics? Is there anything there that you've seen major changes over the last few years?
I think we kind of had this extension of free trade agreements, and Korea is the prime example where they were doing a lot of bilateral free trade agreements with countries around the world. And now we're kind of moving into this broader aspect of trade where we're trying to have multilateral agreements or these big trade agreements, and TPP is the prime example. So it's a trend as far as that it was kind of, that's kind of the next iteration, that was the next process, and that's going to be a huge thing going forward. Is will we be able to get these bigger multilateral trade agreements and trade structures done?
In terms of those trends that you've been describing, do you see those continuing as we head into the second half of 2015, particularly with President Park coming to Washington in October?
Definitely. I think that's the big one, President Park coming in October, and that's going to, again, highlight the rise of Korea and the importance of Korea in U.S. foreign policy. I think many people wanted her to come originally, but understood why she had to stay back in Korea with the MERS crisis going on. But now I think a lot of people are looking forward to her visit, and following on Xi Jinping's visit in September, you have, again, another focus on Asia and Northeast Asia. So, again, people will be seeing stories about Korea, seeing stories about Asia. And when she comes, we'll be able to highlight those aspects and where Korea and the United States can work together to make sure that Asia in the future is peaceful and prosperous.
Following on to that, are there any particular areas of focus that you think need to be on the agenda when President Park comes?
Well, the main thing, one of the main things is going to be dealing with North Korea. Again, we have this issue of North Korean provocations and a difficulty for the United States and South Korea in responding to them. The current example now is the mines that South Korea said were placed in the DMZ and injured those soldiers there. And again, difficulty in actually trying to respond to that action by North Korea. So I think when President Park comes, that is going to again be on the agenda. How are the United States and South Korea working together to deter North Korea? And then how are they going to respond to these smaller provocations that really put the onus on the United States and South Korea as far as how to respond to them? Really difficult situations. I'd like to see also, again, the two sides working on the vision for a broader Asia and a broader vision for the world. Lots of times, two sides can rightfully get focused on North Korea, but that shouldn't be the only thing. South Korea and the United States have a lot vested in a peaceful and prosperous Asia, and they should be constantly talking about what does a broader Asia look like for the United States and South Korea, and how does that translate into what they want to see around the world.
That's a great segue. I know one of the topics that you've been very interested in and that you've done a lot of research and writing on is Korea-India relations and Korea-US-India trilateral relations. Can you give us a little bit of a brief on some of what's going on there and what you see looking forward in the future?
Sure. South Korea-India relations was something that I started looking at during my last year at the Heritage Foundation. and something I was able to bring over here to KEI. And the relationship has grown steadily, and especially since 2010. 2010 for South Korean India was a big year. You had Lee Myung-bak go to India for Republic Day as the chief guest, which is a high honor for any foreign leader, and it was President Lee in 2010. And at that meeting and ceremony, the two sides decided to officially become a strategic partnership. So you have the two countries saying we are going to be strategic partners and do more work together. Also in 2010, you had the Comprehensive Economic Partnership Agreement between South Korea and India come into force, right? So they had already negotiated, officially comes into force, this economic agreement in 2010. And so from 2010, that's where we really see South Korea and India start to do more. The good thing is that since 2010, we've had either the Indian Prime Minister visit Korea or the Korean President visit India for the last 6 years. Very good. And even though I was a little critical at the beginning of the two sides for missing these joint commission meetings, this is where the Indian Minister of External Affairs, basically their foreign minister, and the South Korean foreign minister meet. Now they've gotten back on track and have had consecutive years of the joint commission meeting, which is a good thing. So hopefully this trend can continue where they keep meeting and keep working together. I would just hope that they would find some sort of bigger success story to help propel them a little bit farther along the way. They're steadily improving, but I think they've had a couple opportunities for big success stories and they just haven't panned out.
Looking forward to the future, do you think that there will be a renewed focus on, you know, making those success stories pan out in the long term?
I think so. And I think Prime Minister Modi was able to visit Korea this year. And I think that'll help kind of just renew the focus and refresh the energy for Korean-India relations. Those opportunities, one was POSCO. They had a big investment in the state of Odisha in India, $12 billion, and that just didn't pan out. And POSCO's basically stopped their investment project there. You had South Korea was trying to sell its jet fighter trainer jets to India, and they lost out in the end in a bid. And then they were trying to sell minesweepers, and they got in trouble for how they went about doing the bid. South Korea used a middleman, which was illegal, and they lost out on this minesweeper bid. Those opportunities really would have highlighted the Korea-India relationship, and those are gone now. And so I think with Modi's visit, the two sides have agreed to become a special strategic partnership, but I do think that there is now an opportunity for the two sides to find something new. It might be this LNG carrier, so with shipbuilding. It might be a renewed comprehensive economic partnership agreement. Those things can help kind of really propel the relationship forward.
In terms of South Korea's relationship with other partners in the region, do you see any potential emerging partners outside of India?
Possibly Australia for South Korea. South Korea and Australia have started to do more. A lot of times, and this is what I talk about when I talk about South Korea-India relations, it's really a matter if South Korea has the opportunity to really expand relations with other countries in Asia. Oftentimes, North Korea just does something like this mine incident on the DMZ, and it really just sucks all the attention and concentration and time of the main leaders in South Korea for justifiable reasons, but it just sucks their time and energy and focus back to North Korea issues, and they can't really continue and carry on some of the projects that they would like to do, whether it's with India or Australia or the United States in a broader Asia region. So hopefully South Korea can work with the United States and to try to minimize that effect from North Korea so that South Korea can work with partners and help make Asia better.
All right. In terms of inter-Korean relations, do you see that improving anytime in the future?
Unfortunately, no. I mean, I thought they might have had an opportunity to, but I think this mine incident is really going to hurt them. And then, especially if North Korea tests a missile later this year, which some analysts or reports have suggested they might be thinking about, it's going to really hurt inter-Korean relations. This new propaganda warfare where the South Koreans have decided to start blasting its own kind of information and propaganda in North Korea, and then North Korea's response back to try and blast the same way, just doesn't look good for the two sides getting together. At least the two sides have come to an agreement on the Kaesong wages, so that's something that's relatively positive. And that was a little bit of a sticking point this whole year. And so hopefully that will help move Kaesong along. But again, the Park Geun-hye administration has been trying to internationalize Kaesong, hasn't had too much luck there. So it just seems Park Geun-hye described it this way in her speech a couple weeks ago, piecemeal, right? Just individual projects or individual opportunities to talk to North Korea, and that's it. There's no real connection between a project or a visit or an opportunity for the two sides to get together. It's just, okay, we're going to give them some aid for the drought. Okay, Kim Tae-jung's wife's going to go to North Korea. But that's it. Those are just, as President Park said, piecemeal. They're just individual events or opportunities, but nothing else. North Korea has shut that down, has not allowed any kind of connection or sustainability in inter-Korean relations to happen. And it's hurting what President Park had wanted to do, to try to build some trust, to try to build some momentum for inter-Korean relations in order to have a little bit more stability on the Korean Peninsula and opportunity for inter-Korean relations to move forward, U.S.-North Korea relations to move forward, and kind of the six-party talk process to move forward. I think that's what she really wanted to happen. It's just not happening.
All right. In terms of the U.S. side of the relationship, how do you see things going forward, especially given the election season that's starting up now?
It's going to be interesting to see how Asia plays into the conversation about foreign policy. With what President Obama has done in the last year or so with the Iran deal and with opening up relations with Cuba, those have really taken the focus on foreign policy, along with kind of Greece and Ukraine for Europe, as well as kind of Syria, Iraq, Afghanistan, Middle East issues, right? So Asia just kind of got pushed to the side a little bit. China's always going to be a big factor in that. But as far as, you know, what are we doing with North Korea? How are we working together with our allies? How are we dealing with China and the South China Sea? I'm worried that those conversations aren't going to come up that much, and they usually don't in presidential campaigns, or in especially toward the end when you finally have two candidates. It's a lot, can be a lot of domestic issues, which I still think will be on the board. And so even though right now there's still some focus on foreign policy, especially as this Iran deal starts to play out, opening relations with Cuba. So foreign policy is there for a lot of the candidates, and since we have so many, especially on the Republican side, that they can all kind of comment on it or try and get their points in on foreign policy. Once that field starts to narrow, once we get closer to having the two candidates from each party, I'm worried that the conversation about Asia is not going to be there, and it needs to be. And so hopefully in the foreign policy debate between the two final candidates, you have that. Hopefully in some of these debates, the moderators are going to ask some more foreign policy questions about Asia, about China, about Korea, about Southeast Asia, South China Sea, to make sure that these candidates and our next leader understands that, yeah, Middle East and Europe, those are some major fires that they're going to have to work on. But the broader Asia and Asia at large is going to be important. It's going to be an Asian century. It is an Asian century. And if those candidates or the next president doesn't really understand that, that's going to be difficult for the United States in foreign policy in general, not just our Asia policy.
All right, Nicholas, any other parting thoughts for your time here at KEI?
It has been great working here at KEI. Working on Korea every day is blessing and as so much fun. The U.S.-Korea relationship is great, and to work with the people behind that is truly amazing. And so even though I'm going on to do my PhD at Catholic, I'll still be working on Korea and still be working on Asia, because I said it is an Asian century. and we're going to need a strong U.S.-Korea relationship to make sure that Asian century is peaceful and prosperous.
Nicholas Samosevich, thank you very much for joining us here today, and good luck with your future endeavors.
Thanks, Jenna.
Our guest today was Nicholas Samosevich, KEI's Director of Research and Academic Affairs, who is leaving KEI to pursue his PhD at Catholic University. Thank you so much for listening to Korean Context, and we hope you will join us again next time.